How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Figure Four Daily, April 27th, 2011, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We have two big guests here today on the show on a day where we will have five guests on the radio programs in the course of one day. Lance Storm and Todd Martin are on the show right now. Later on today, we're going to be joined by Mick Foley, Colt Cabana, and in the main event, Mike Coughlin's going to be on the show talking Toronto. Lance, how you doing today?
Coughlin's the main event.
He is today, apparently.
Wow.
Main eventer on any show in the country, as they used to say.
All righty. Well, I'm doing well, other than having to open the show or curtain jerk for Mike Coughlin.
That's right. Well, the as they always say, Lance, the opener is just as important as the main event.
There you go. So I'm just as important as Mike Coughlin.
Yeah. Todd, how you doing?
I'm good.
You also are just as important as Mike Coughlin.
Thank you.
All right. So anyway, the reason we're doing this show here today is Lance, of course, is involved in a new reality TV show project called World of Hurt, which is going to be debuting very soon in the cave up in Canada. I'm going to let Lance talk about the show here in just a moment. But to preface this, I got a screener copy of this, as did Todd, and Lance wanted to have us both on the show today to discuss the show, different aspects of it, and get the word out about the program. So Todd has seen the pilot, I have seen the pilot, and Lance, tell us a little bit more about the show, when it debuts, where people can see it, etc.
Yeah, it's on the cave. That's the name of a station up here. We're not in the cave. We're not airing it in some cave up in the mountains anywhere, but yeah. It's one of the digital channels that most people are going to have to actually request it from their cable company. There's a lot of premium cable channels, if you will, that you can pay an extra dollar or two for and have. But yeah, it airs nationally in Canada. I believe 5 p.m. Eastern on Sunday is the debut. I believe it will air numerous times throughout the week, but 5 p.m. on Sunday, starting this Sunday, will be the new episodes. There's 10 30-minute episodes, and for the most part, they're designed to stand alone, so you don't necessarily have to catch them in order, because it is not an elimination-style show. It's more of a documentary-style show.
Now, before we go any further, for those of you that did not listen to the Brian and Vinny show last night, you might want to go back and listen to that first. Vinny and I talked about the show for about 20, 25 minutes, so that's a good primer there if you just want to know what happened on the show as we talk about it here today. But we'll try to explain everything if you didn't listen to that show. And Todd, very quickly, before we get into it, what were your thoughts overall on the first episode?
I enjoyed the show. I thought it was fun.
Very simple. Let's start out with my.
You already gave the recap, so I mean, I could just sort of recap it. But, I mean, you sort of hit all the high points there.
Sure. So let's start about talking about individual parts of the show. Lance, the first thing I just want to talk about is you sent me a text this morning after listening to the review last night, and I don't have it in front of me. It was something to the effect of, "You do realize that Irena signed with WWE." And suffice to say, what a way to wake up this morning to get this news. This was the girl, for those of you that didn't see the show, which is all of you, this girl was, you know, she was, I can't even say that she was the Rima of the show, for those of you that watch Tough Enough. Because Rima, at least, really made you believe that she wanted to be a wrestler. And the way that Irena was portrayed on the show, it was more like she wanted to be a TV star. This was her vehicle in. She really was no... Actually, I guess she really was the Rima. But anyway, regardless, she drove everybody nuts. She brought in a lot of drama and baggage. Everybody hated her. She wasn't all that good in the ring. And these are all portrayals on the show. I don't necessarily know how it was in real life. She supposedly showed up late for the first show, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And she gets signed to WWE, Lance.
Yes, she was actually... I guess not. We were done filming, but she went down to an OVW tryout one of the weekends during filming. And did the OVW thing, was seen by Johnny Ace there, and then she went down in January and was looked at again and was signed. She was the first female of one of my students that got signed. And then Tennille Taylor also on the, I don't know how much she was in the first episode, but she's on the show as well. She's been signed too. So, Yeah, two of the people out of the 10 have been signed, and she was actually the first one of the crew. Go figure.
Go figure. You know, it wasn't just that I was watching the show hoping that she would be eliminated and then later finding out there are no eliminations, and you can talk about that here in a second. But to wake up this morning and to get the news that, in fact, she has been signed to WWE, of all the people on that show, and of course you mentioned Tennille has been signed as well, but she was the one that really stuck out in a lot of ways. To find out that she was signed by WWE and apparently the French Stallion is without a deal, God damn, that pissed me off.
Well, hopefully the French Stallion may get his chance at some point, too. The one thing you have to be aware of, though, things are amplified and edited to maximize the results. So, Irina brings a little bit more to the table than they highlighted in her episode.
I hope so.
But at the end of the day, it also shows that... you know what I mean? When they're looking for a certain thing, whatever that is, if you happen to fit the bill. And one thing, too, that I think was Irina's big strong suit is she's actually a really intelligent person. Like, she's got, I think, one or two degrees and worked fairly high up in banking in Australia for a few years. So she's not, while there was certainly a lot of drama, she is an intelligent person.
Tell us a little bit about the French Stallion, the star of the show, no offense.
Yeah, and actually he didn't have too big of a part in it. It'll be interesting to see what happens when we actually get to his episode, because I don't know if you've grasped that, but each episode focuses on a different individual. He trained with me quite a while ago. He was one of my earlier sessions. He's from Nice, France. And he is, quite the character at the best of times. But when you put a camera in his face and going, we'd really like to see some amplified personality and whatever you can give us. He was the first one to wholeheartedly jump into, this is reality TV. They want some personality. By God, I'm going to give it to them.
Sure.
Just his look gives off tremendous personality.
Yeah.
Well, he does, and that was the big thing when I first met with Pyramid Productions. They're like, okay, we need a cast. Any ideas? And there was a few people I thought of, and of course went and found some photos that I thought demonstrated their look and their personality. And the second they saw the French Stallion, they're like, "Yep, we want him." that was I think Brian and Vinny mentioned it. I think one of the strengths of the show is we don't have cookie cutters in the show.
That's for sure.
Whether you like them or dislike them, at the end of the day, I have no doubt that the vast majority of the 10 people, you'll be able to distinguish them and know who they are and what they're about.
How did that casting process come together? Did you just sort of pick together different people you'd worked with in the past, or how did that come about?
For the most part, there's not every one of them, but there's, certainly a few of them that are former students of mine that I really wanted to help out by giving them the exposure of working in television. And I thought that they would be good personalities, a.k.a. the French Stallion. And then there was others where it got to the point where we were trying to, fit the bill, and it's, okay, who's locally that could... The fact that we had a three-week window to shoot, not everyone was willing to, fly over from Europe to do the show. So we used some guys that were local that we thought would be good, and then there was a few where it got to the point of, okay, you've got, say, six or eight of the 10, it's like... Do you guys have any suggestions? And, threw a few names out and look at some photos and decide who we wanted and then see if they're interested. So it was a several-week process, but I think we came together with some good people.
Now, when we were watching the show, obviously, if you listened to the review last night, I was just irate at the idea that Irina was not being cut and that she was going to continue to be on every episode, which, in the end, ends up being rather intriguing that, this is not like your normal reality show where only the strong survive. The weak also survive. So God knows what's going to happen. The way they're portraying Irina by the end of the show, God knows someone may try to kill this woman. But you, I guess, can explain to everybody why there are not, in fact, eliminations on this program.
Yeah, it really comes down to rules in Canadian television I believe there was certain grant money and different things that you could apply for when producing Canadian content television show, or the way they have to be classed on the networks, that It was very clear right at the beginning that this could not be a contest. There could not be eliminations or a prize at the end, because then it changed the designation of what the show would be classified as. And then either, you know, funding or, you know, government grants or different things to produce projects wouldn't be the same. Because at one point, when they first pitched the idea, I said, you know, I've probably got enough stroke. I could probably get WWE to agree to, you know, give the, you know, the winner a look, if you will. And they're like, no, we can't have a prize. We can't have a winner. This is a class is a docudrama, so that's the way it has to be. And just to clarify, not everyone is on every episode. It all depends on the interaction involved, in that there's probably, you know, four or five people in every episode. So any episode that Irina is in, it's, you know, if she had a lot of conflict and interaction with someone, then, you know, they'll be into her episode, and she'll obviously be into theirs. So, you know, because there was a couple people that weren't really in the first episode, but, you know, they'll be featured in the second episode. So you'll get, you know, a half a dozen of everybody in each episode, with the primary focus on each person's journey for their own episode.
Are there a lot of reality shows specific to Canada?
Not that I know. There's probably a few. Because we get all-American programming, a lot of the Canadian channels, like The Cave and other such things, they don't get tremendous followings or big viewership. So a lot of these smaller Canadian content shows, you know, you don't see as much. And I don't watch a lot of television, to be honest. So I don't know how many Canadian reality TV shows there are. Yeah, obviously there probably isn't a lot that are contest-related.
Yeah, well, that was the reason I'm asking, because as an American, you know, I mentioned this was my biggest criticism of the show. As an American, when the show first started, it was like, you know, I didn't know the deal about the rules at the time. And so, you know, I was under the assumption that this was some sort of contest here at the end, or there was some sort of prize or, you know, whatever the case might be. And so the show, like, you know, it starts, and it kind of just starts with you having the guys come into the ring to take bumps and that sort of thing. And I'm thinking, why isn't there, like, an explanation here of, you know, what the show is, what these people are trying to win or accomplish? And later it comes out that there is none because of the rules. So I didn't know if maybe a Canadian viewer would watch this and just, you know, immediately understand what it was, because that's how Canadian reality shows work. And if it was just like an American-Canadian thing where I watched and was expecting more than I was getting.
Well, I think, you know, the open of the show, which, again, is a trailer available on the website, so everybody, even Americans, can watch that, for the most part, you know, gives you an explanation of what it was. I think you went in with false expectations on the assumption based on, again, Tough Enough or Ultimate Fighter, which I suppose a lot of
yes.
viewers will. But I think the problem on our point is that when you've only got a 30-minute episode, and, again, when we created it, it was very important for The Cave that they be predominantly standalone episodes. They didn't want where you had to watch 1 through 10 in order, because, again, because of the way The Cave and the level of network and stuff that it is, it's not like NBC where you've got millions and millions of viewers, especially considering, you know, we've got such a fraction of the population of you, that I think they really expect that, you know, it's not like everyone's going to tune in on Sunday at 5 and we're going to get, you know, our 1.5 rating or anything. People are going to watch them throughout the week. People are going to see them out of order. So they didn't want to make it serial episodic where you have to watch them in order. So you couldn't really have the introductory episodes so much. So I think if you go in with, hey, what's this? I think it's explained well enough. But if you go in thinking, oh, hey, it's a Canadian Tough Enough, then, yeah, you're going to go in with the assumption you do and perhaps get confused. But I think in the end, I think this structure works a lot better. And it was actually Buddy Day, I don't know if he'd be the producer, but he was the head guy. He wasn't the director, but he was the guy overseeing it all. It was his idea to focus each episode on the individual people, thinking that it was sort of a different take than had been done, in that it's this person struggled through the whole process, this person struggled through the whole process. And at first I didn't think it would work, but now that I've seen 5 episodes, I really like it. Because it where, you know, the first episode is Tough Enough, you know, you invest your hour, and then that person's gone. And it's like, well, if you had any interest in them, they're gone already. And it's like, well, if they're not even going to be in the rest of the show, why do we bother spending any time on them? So at least in this regard, with World of Hurt, if you watched episode 1 and for whatever reason either love or hate Irina, and have interest in seeing more about her, then you will see her interacting with people again later. Or, like you said, you really like the French Stallion and you only got a glimpse of him. So there's probably more likelihood of you wanting to see episode 2 and 3, hoping to see the French Stallion's episode.
I will say, I would like to...
It worked out well.
I want to meet the person who, in fact, loved Irina on this show. I got to talk to that person for a while. And I need to see the episode that focuses on the French Stallion. Todd, go ahead.
Without the competition, is there some sort of culmination at the end, though, that it sort of builds towards to some degree?
Well, again, the show did for us, in the, you know, we did all the training building towards the live event where they all had, you know, their match and so forth and then got their evaluation. But the way the show ended up doing, it's like really each episode has the build, but not episode to episode. So there isn't going to be a series climaxing finale. It really is, again, you're going to see nine variations of what you saw already with the other episodes, in that you will get, again, introduced more to the French Stallion and get to sort of hear his story. And now it won't be the same, you know, with any kind of training or different things, because everybody has different, things they're lacking, different strengths that, you know, other people's episodes will focus on different forms of training and so forth. So the episodes will be different in that regard. But for the most part, beginning, middle, and end is for each episode, not for the series.
So basically there's a
match. So they're going to run pretty much concurrently then? So like the next episode will be sort of what was going on in other parts at the same time?
Yes, basically, yeah. The next episode will be, I think I'm just sitting here looking at my desk, Derek Cross's episode. So you'll see Derek Cross arrive. You'll hear his story as far as what he's hoping to get out of the training process, and then you'll get to see the stuff that he worked on more and what was focused on his struggle, and then you'll get to see his match and the review on whether he failed or succeeded, as well as also you will have, again, I'm trying to think, actually, the second episode, you'll get a quite a different cast of characters, and there's more focus on the people that weren't in the first episode. But then when you get to episode 3, you'll get, you know, more Dylan and Irina again. There's no shortage of Dylan and Irina fireworks throughout the episodes.
So all of the matches, I guess, were taped on the same day. So there's like a match at the end of every show, but all of those matches were actually taped at the same event.
Yes.
Okay. I understand.
Yeah, so there was, again, I think I've mentioned before, maybe not on this show, but on several interviews, that there was, you know, we had a 3 to 3.5 week window to shoot the show. So, you know, and at the beginning we had a bit of a meeting with me and the director and Buddy and so forth, giving a, you know, what elements can we focus on with each people? What does each person need? What do you figure we have? To sort of get a layout or a structure, an idea on where we are. And then we, you know, did for the most part, the 3 weeks of training. And we do the training and stuff in the morning. In the afternoon, it'd be a lot of, if they needed specific reaction shots, they needed specific interviews, where, again, you know, the day that Irina landed on her head, you know, the afternoon was a lot of people's reactions to it and so forth and so on. So then we did that, and then had the event right near the end of the 3 weeks, did the big event where everybody did their matches and so forth. And then the last half week was a lot of the, you know, me summing up and so forth. Like, the show opens with me sitting on the ring giving a bit of a, hey, this is what this episode's going to focus on. That was all done at the end, once they sort of had a decent idea on what they were going to put together as far as all the footage. And it was really neat to see, because they did separate me from the cast a lot, in that anything that you saw shot in the kitchen, anything you saw shot in the locker room, or even just when they pulled them aside and had a one-on-one interview, I didn't see any of that. But there were times where they pulled me aside and I was by the director watching on the monitors when they were shooting different things in the gym area. And it'd be interesting watching them, because they had the little, you know, the run sheet. And they'd mark the time codes and the day and stuff with a, oh, hey, we can use that, where they were already piecing in how they would, okay, that can go into Derek's episode, this can go into Frenchie's episode, this can go into, and it was really interesting to watch. But yeah, so each episode technically would be running concurrently all through the same time. It's just spliced up with each person's journey through the 3 week process.
Now, Brian's just been burying poor Irina, and I think she comes across negatively overall in the episode, but she wasn't entirely unsympathetic. I mean, they showed her, you know, landing on her head and trying to continue at the beginning while the other people were making fun of her. She sort of felt bad for her at the beginning before, you know, some of the other stuff happened. What are your impressions of her overall? Obviously, she's your first time to go to WWE, as far as how she actually comes across outside of the context of this individual show.
Yeah, they really did, to be honest, a fair bit of editing with her. You know, she does on occasion have the ability to rub people the wrong way. But I think, in all honesty, I think she's, you know, she's got a good heart and she tries. But I think part of it is the fact that she came from, you know, a legitimate career and other things where she is really new in wrestling. I think she really wants to do this, and I think her heart's in it. But she doesn't have the years of being a fan, or at least the years of I'm going to do this for a living behind her yet, that she does, you know, put her foot in her mouth on occasion. And if you've even remotely rubbed someone the wrong way and then put your foot in your mouth in this industry, people tend to jump on you. And then to make it worse, obviously, you know, everyone's got the red light fever of, well, they want drama, this is TV and everything else. So where you might be apt to just sort of shake your head because it's TV, you're going to speak your mind. So it ended up, I think, getting exaggerated to a certain extent. So I think I like her a hell of a lot better than she comes off on the show, but she did make a lot of mistakes in it. Conduct-wise on the show. So even in that regard, I think it was a good learning lesson for her because she would, you know, serve her far better to have made those mistakes on our show than on Florida Championship Wrestling.
I was sympathetic to her landing on her head, you know. That clearly sucked. But, I mean, to me, if this were a show where there were eliminations, then I would look at that like, okay, you need to be eliminated immediately before you actually do kill yourself.
Yeah, and it was a shame because it wasn't it was edited out, and again with only 30 minutes you had to cut it. But she took her bumps initially, and it's like, okay, do that one again, but you need a little more height. You got to jump higher, and then she decided to jump lower and dove headfirst into the floor. So it was while very frightening and scary at first, it was almost comical that it was 10 seconds after I said, okay, just try to jump higher.
I can't believe they took that line out. That would have, well, I don't know. I guess you don't want that spot to be comedy, I guess. So now, have you ever?
And also, too, when you've only got 20 minutes of, you know, I think it's 22 minutes of content in a half hour, you got to keep it pretty tight.
Have you ever seen anything like that before?
The closest I saw, there was a student who, there was like one of the first days we were taking bumps, where I'll have a guy get on his hands and knees in front of him, so he's got a box, and he sort of, you know, you can rest your chest against it and take your front bumps, so you don't have to worry about landing on your head at first. And this guy had done a couple of those, and he got back in line. When it came to his turn, he just stood there in front of the box with his hands at his side and dove over it headfirst into the floor.
Oh, God.
He was fine, but I'm like, what were you doing? He says, I have no idea. That he had done it correctly several times and used the person as a box to support himself, and he was just standing there like he was contemplating something, and then just with his hands at his side, dove headfirst into the mat on the other side of the guy. And I was just like, what the hell were you thinking?
This is why everyone should take gymnastics.
There you go. I'm certainly not going to dispute that, although I think certain sports attract certain athletes, and I think there's a lot of people that could take gymnastics for 1,000 years and still aren't going to be good at flipping.
Well, that's true, but wrestling seems, based on a lot of reality shows I've seen lately, to attract a lot of non-athletes.
Well, I think, and I've written articles about this, and part of the problem is, I think, that if you're interested in baseball, you can play it in grade school, and you can play peewee and t-ball, and if you end up not being good at it, you know, by the time you're 10, you've been the last person picked on the team, and you've given up on baseball. And if you want to get into hockey, there's peewee hockey and all kinds of leagues, where, again, if you're not going to be good at it, you'll have failed before you're 15 and quit. With pro wrestling, you know, you've pretty much got to be 18 before you're even allowed to start. So there's all those people that, you know, may have tried baseball and failed and football and failed and gymnastics and failed that, you know, at 20 they've never played a sport in their life, but they're a wrestling fan, so they decide to embark on a professional wrestling career.
Do you think it's maybe because they feel that, well, it's fake?
Well, I think that's a big part of it. I think there is an illusion that it's fake, therefore it is easy.
Sure.
And it is anything but, probably on both counts.
One thing that was noticeable on the show was the amount of international wrestlers. I feel like you might have discussed it at some point in the past, but if so, it was a while ago. Do you know what it is that gravitates so many international wrestlers towards your school?
I think the big thing is that, you know, I get a lot of people from Europe, I think, because the British Bulldogs came to Calgary and made it big. But I think also, too, is you don't have good schools in these other countries because you don't have the bulk of workers, you know, from past generations that are going to be there. You know, they don't have a Harley Race school, a Booker T school, a Lance Storm school in Australia, in, you know, in Belgium, in Ireland, and so forth.
France.
So if they're pardon?
France.
France. So if they are serious about getting into training, they have to hop on a plane and cross an ocean. So once you're making that choice, then you're looking at what school is the best, and obviously I think mine is definitely in the top couple, if not the best. Where, again, I don't get as many Americans, I think primarily because there are more options in the U.S. So before you're going to look at, I'm going to leave the country to train, you know, okay, do I have anything in the U.S.? So I'm going to draw less U.S. students. Where, again, I get Canadian students and I get overseas students, and I think that's probably why I get so many international ones that once you're willing to buy a plane ticket and relocate to a different country, you're pretty much willing to go anywhere, so I might as well go to Calgary because that's going to be, you know, one of, if not my best choice.
When did
I heard a rumor there was nudity in the second show? Is that someone other than the is that the French Stallion? Is that one of the women? What's going on there?
It's not one of the women, and it's not the French Stallion. Although they certainly have footage of the French Stallion, but no, it's. The second episode gets into some character development and pushing the envelope, and at one point there's a locker room shot that we see far more of Derek Cross than we need to.
Todd, where did you get this information? AVN?
I can't disclose my sources.
Wow. Did your package say non-pornographic, but wait till next week?
It did have the non-pornographic notice. I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah. Lance, did you refer to him as Frenchie earlier?
Yeah. When he first went through my class, again, I'm not sure even what year. It probably would have been 2006. We had a guy from England. We had a guy from France. We had a few others. And it was just, you know, the English guy we called English, the French guy we called Frenchie. So we always called him Frenchie. To this day, I still call him that. When he emails me, he signs it Frenchie. But yeah, the French Stallion is a name that he wrestles under, not all the time, because he's got a couple different gimmicks depending on the promotion he works for, but the French Stallion is one of them. He was in my September of 2006 class.
Oh my.
And we've just called him Frenchie ever since.
Now,
yeah, the French Stallion is a legitimate name he wrestles under.
When did Casey Spinelli train with you?
She didn't. She was one of the ones that wasn't one of my students. She,
I see.
The show, I think she worked one PWA show that I had met her before, but other than that, I'd never been in the ring with her or done any training with her, so this was my first experience with Spinelli.
Was she the only one, or was it just her? Or were there others?
No. There was others, but yeah, she was probably the person I knew the least.
I see, okay. Because She'd worked Tulalip, several Tulalip shows. I saw her all the time. And I when I saw the show, I was like, wait a second, she trained with Lance Storm? How did I not know that? And I guess the answer is that she didn't.
Yeah, she's from BC, so Tulalip would be a short jaunt for her to come down. But yeah, I had met her at a PWA show, and when we were looking to fill the last spot for, second last spot for girls, asked her if she'd be interested, and she was.
So you've seen five of the total episodes?
Yes. I've seen half.
What would you say so far is the best?
I don't know. It's really hard to say because they all have their strengths. They all have their weaknesses. I don't know which one I would say is the best yet. I'm hoping the best is yet to come. So, but on the whole, I'm quite happy with all of them.
Is there anything when watching the five episodes, I mean, you talked about how you weren't involved with a lot of stuff and such. Was there anything watching the five episodes, and you don't even have to name it, just tell us if there was anything. We don't want to have any spoilers here, obviously, but was there anything that you just watched and you went, oh my God, like, I had no idea that happened, or I can't believe that happened, or anything like that that just totally knocked you off your chair?
There's a little bit, again, a little bit in episode two, stuff in the locker room that sort of went, oh my God. but I think watching them, and this is probably my only, or at least my biggest criticism, the evaluations at the end were a lot longer. But because of the length of the show, they were edited. They had to be shortened down. And because I'm such a anal retentive nitpicky guy, I was annoyed that, you know, the overall evaluation wasn't what aired. So it's like when you take bits and pieces, stuff, it doesn't come off as what I would want to be the evaluation at the end of the show sometimes, that, you know, you needed to say more, or when I, you know, said why I was harping on this one point or why I ignored other points. You know, because of the time frame, the evaluations were edited down, and I really wish they would have been shown in their entirety.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, sort of a way to sort of, you know, sort of synthesize what happened on the episode and what the, you know, what the person, you know, went through and how, where they're going from. So I think that makes a lot of sense, actually. But, you know, you only have 20 minutes.
I actually was really... Yeah, so. I guess this is a high praise for the show, but when it was over, even though I was irate that Irina wasn't cut, I was like, that's it? I thought it was like an hour show, and it was over in 20 minutes.
Yeah, once commercials are in, it'll be 30 minutes. But yeah, I do think that's good in that when I watched the first one, I was very much eager to watch another one. You know, if it was 1 hour of Irina, perhaps it would be too much, or even an hour of the French Stallion would probably be too much. But with a half hour, I think they did a really good job of representing, you know, the training and some of the work that goes into it. You know, they gave you enough personality and drama, I think, to interest you. And then at the end of 30 minutes, it's like you're interested in seeing more. And I've got a meeting, in 2 hours with the, production company to talk about perhaps, doing more. I don't know if we're talking a full second season or just a few more episodes or what, but there is, the Cave seems to be really happy with what they've seen so far, so we're talking about potentially having more of something in the future.
I thought one of the best things on the show was whenever somebody was, you know, doing one of those cut-ins where they were talking about what was going on, first off, they had a graphic with their name, which I'm always a fan of, because, of course, you want to try and remember these people's names. But also, and they don't do this in America, underneath the person's name was an explanation of what they were talking about. The highlight being when Dylan Knight was talking about Irina's bullshit, and underneath it actually said, "Tired of Irina's bullshit." I've never even seen anything like that before. That was a strong plus on this program.
Let's just cut to the heart of the matter and let you know what's going
on
here.
It was like you didn't even need to listen to the guy. You could have turned the volume down and understood this particular... It was like subtitles. Let me ask a couple of questions.
For the hearing impaired.
Yes. Ask a couple of questions about training, then we'll let Todd ask his final questions, and we'll talk a little bit about the draft. So I'd never been to your school before. I'd been told by folks that were there that it's just impeccably clean and that sort of thing. Never actually saw you run a class or anything like that. So we got a glimpse of it here, and it's rather interesting. You know, you had everyone go in there and take their bumps. They took their back bumps. They took their flare flops, took their bumps straight onto their head in preparation for pile drivers. And then you had aggression training. And as Vinny noted, you know, when he first saw aggression drill, he laughed at, you know, an aggression drill. This is wacky. And then when you actually watched it, it was like, why doesn't everybody do an aggression drill? And I don't know if I've ever seen, like, a drill just about aggression at a wrestling school, but they are certainly needed more. Where did you come up with the idea for the aggression drill?
I have no idea. I think it was probably just watching people
not be aggressive,
and especially when, you know, you're in an empty building or you're in a class and they're doing stuff. You know, they don't have the emotion or the intensity they need to, and you just watch it going, I'm not buying this. You know, you've got to convince me to, you know, that you're actually trying to beat somebody up. So I do a lot of that. You've just got to find that intensity, and sometimes it'll just be, you know, you've got 60 seconds. I want you to just mug this person for 60 seconds. You've got to find that in yourself, and I think that's a real important part of, you know, the craft that we do. And so many people, you know, at the indie level as well as just in training, you know, they get into slow, casual, cocky heel where they just walk around and act arrogantly, and it's like, you know, this is not creating any sympathy whatsoever. There's a time and place for it, but at some point in time, you really just need to mug somebody and beat the shit out of them. And so I focus on that a lot, and it's like, you guys got to bring the intensity and bring the aggression.
A lot of the guys, Irina being on this particular show, kind of an example of this not being the case, but a lot of them very, very solid basics, you know, good bumps and that sort of thing. Is there any footage on any of the shows? Because I know when you run your classes, it's like one of the big deals is at the end of the session, you get a full-length match with Lance Storm. And is there footage on any of these shows of any of these guys? Or because they've already graduated, they don't really get that last match, or they get them regularly. How does that work? Is there more footage of you working on this show elsewhere?
There's more footage of me wrestling, or at least I assume so. I haven't seen it all. But there was a lot of me doing stuff. Not full matches by any stretch of the imagination, but I know as we were doing different things, there was a lot of times where the director really liked the dynamic of seeing the students do something and then seeing me do something to illustrate the difference, you know, either an intensity level or, you know, just the experience level that I have over them, the difference that... The same thing can look so differently depending on who's doing it. So there should be a fair bit more of me wrestling in there. But there isn't actually me having matches with people, again, because of the time frame of the episodes in particular. Like, I think they only show probably not much more than, you know, a minute of the matches that the students have at the end on a live event per episode, too. So, there should be more of me wrestling as the episodes go along.
Todd, any final questions?
That was pretty much it. Do you think there's going to be a DVD distribution deal eventually to make it available to people outside of Canada if they want to?
I honestly don't know. I would imagine. It was always mentioned as a possibility, as much as I know they want to market it to a network in the States and internationally and so forth. So I think it's really going to come down to how the thing gets over. That if, you know, if it becomes a big success here, the chances of getting... you know, selling it to a station in the States then increases. Or if it becomes, you know, successful enough here that there seems to be, you know, online interest or other things for it, then I would imagine they'd put it out on DVD. Except at the end of the day, if there's money to be made at it, I can't imagine why they wouldn't.
Well, actually, the screener I got was in a full DVD case with a DVD cover and artwork, whole nine yards. So, I don't know, maybe it is in the works.
I would hope so, yeah, because the five I have are all, you know, packaged and professionally and printed up on commercial-looking DVDs, so I think it would be smart, because how much does it cost to really produce, you know what I mean? So trying to get them available out there would probably be smart.
Or GoFightLive.tv.
There you go.
I don't know. All right, let's talk about the draft here a bit. Todd, what were your thoughts on the draft, and any picks that really surprised you? We'll start with that.
I can't say anything really surprised me. I mean, there hasn't been a lot of time to sort of sink in, and usually the first couple weeks after the draft, you can start to tell what they're going to do with different people, and it becomes more clear what they're doing. You know, there might be some guy that they're planning to turn face or turn heel and give a big push to that you wouldn't be necessarily factoring in. So we'll see what they go from here. I think that, you know, they set up a great run of heels on Raw to, you know, I presumably feud with Cena over the coming, you know, year or so. So I think they've got that set there. I kind of hope on SmackDown they don't do the same thing with Orton, because, you know, the Orton and Cena are both kind of played out, and it would be nice to see some different things going on, particularly since Orton isn't as hot as Cena with the merchandising and the live attendance. So, yeah, that was sort of my overall thoughts.
Lance.
The biggest thing, and this may be, you know, what you're looking for, but the show itself just drives me crazy. I don't understand it. I don't understand why Raw guys celebrate when a big-name guy gets drafted to their brand. I don't understand why they would bother fighting to win draft picks. You know, if I was a middleweight in Strikeforce, would I fight real hard hoping we could draft Anderson Silva? I don't want that guy on my show.
Good point.
I just have less chance of being a champion when bigger name guys come to my brand. I don't understand why you'd be happy.
Well, maybe, you know, it's the old school. It's the old school deal where, you know, in the 80s, if you were on the A show and Hulk Hogan was working on the show with you, then since you got a cut of the gate, everybody made more money because he was such a big draw.
Yeah, or maybe it's just they're thinking long and hard to bragging rights and figuring their chances of winning that trophy will increase.
That could also be.
Just from the concept that when, like, the Battle Royal, I'm like, why are these guys fighting? I don't understand it. I don't know why you would fight that hard where, again, you could fight tooth and nail and risk injury to get some guys drafted to Raw, and then you get drafted off the damn show later on anyway. So all your work went to naught. And when, you know, when Randy Orton got drafted to SmackDown and they show the SmackDown locker room celebrating, I'm like, why are they celebrating? Everybody here just took a step down the ladder.
Yeah.
So I'm just watching the show going, I don't understand this. Like, I realize why they're doing it, because it gives them a reason for the show, and it gives them a reason for the matches, and you've got to do this, you know, lottery thing, because you can't do real picks, but just the concept of it, I just don't understand the motivation.
Any thoughts on that, Todd?
Oh, no, I completely agree with Lance. I just sort of try to turn my brain off of those things, because, you know, WWE just sort of does those things all the time, and if you got too focused on it, it would just drive you insane. I think you can justify on some level that some of the guys would be excited about and some of the guys would be disappointed. Like, if you're a top guy in one brand, like, if all the top guys in your brand are gone, your show may not do well in the ratings. You may be blamed for it. You know, you may be in trouble. Or consequently, you may just be proud of your show if you've been on there for a long time and you want it to sort of succeed and you think you can beat everyone. But the idea that everyone on the show would be universally excited about this and everyone would be cheering on one side, everyone would be all disappointed on the other, just felt forced. I think it's sort of it's a WWE trend in general where they try to micromanage everything and sort of direct everyone to do this and act in a certain way, you know, use a certain terminology when it would be better if they just sort of let people to their own devices to sort of discern their own motivation so people would be acting differently depending upon what they think. But I mean, that's a little on the subtle side for the way WWE tends to operate.
Just got an email here. Someone sent me an article about you, Lance, from the Calgary Herald. Were you aware of this?
Yeah, it was the front page of the entertainment section this morning in the newspaper, and then the online version has a brief story as well.
That's right. There's a story here, you locking up with KC Spinelli, ironically, someone that actually didn't train with you before this show, and largely talking about her wanting to be a star. She's got red life fever. Wait, that's you that said that. When the red light's on, you gotta be on, Lance says. How about that? All right, this weekend is obviously UFC in Toronto, which is in your neck of the woods, Lance, that being Canada. And I want to get both of your thoughts on the top matches on the show. So we'll start with you, Todd. Does Jake Shields have any chance here? I know you're going to say yes, but, I mean, seriously, does he have any chance?
I'm certainly not expecting him to win. I mean, his game plan to beat GSP is essentially he's going to have to out-wrestle him and control him over a period of time. And nobody ever does that to GSP. So, you know, it's tough to suspect that Jake Shields will be the guy to do it. But hey, I mean, he's pulled a lot of upsets over the year, and he's on quite a streak. So, I mean, you don't want to completely discount him. But certainly, I am in the vast majority, in thinking that it is GSP's fight to lose.
Now, Todd, let me clarify something because I want to know if I can actually believe my ears when I heard this. Was it stated on the last episode of Primetime by Shields, I think it was one of his trainers, claiming that GSP better take this fight to the ground? Because if he can't get this fight to the ground, he's in big trouble. Did he actually say that?
I thought you were going to say the thing about him being not having been knocked down in 11 years.
Oh, that's beyond bullshit. I don't even I know that was bullshit, but...
Yeah, I mean, it was amusing to see. I don't remember whether it was a countdown or the prime time, but at one point they were like, you know, GSP shouldn't be taking, you know, Jake Shields seriously. You know, Jake Shields shouldn't be taking him seriously. Shouldn't be taking him lightly on the feet because, you know, Jake Shields is really good on his feet. And, you know, they've been showing these clips of GSP working with Freddie Roach with these really crisp boxing techniques. And, like, they have to show something, of course, when they say, you know, he shouldn't be sleeping on Jake Shields' stand-up. And so they show these clips of Jake Shields striking with people, and it just looked completely weak. You know, he's throwing these light leg kicks to Dan Henderson, you know, these light punches that weren't really landing. I mean, those were, like, the best, you know, those were the best clips they could come up with for the notion that, you know, Jake Shields had this great stand up. So I mean, it was certainly quite the little thing to swallow there.
Yeah, I'll say. Lance, thoughts on that fight?
Yeah, I'm not betting against GSP anytime soon. So, I agree that anyone has a chance, but I wouldn't be giving Jake Shields a huge chance.
Have you got a chance to see any of the primetime specials?
Very little. It's a busy week for me because not only does World of Hurt start on Sunday, but Monday I start a new session, so I've been busy as hell. But yeah, like you say, you know, when you have to take GSP to the ground and out wrestle him to win, that's not a great formula.
I also, Todd, since you've seen the shows, GSP has done goddamn, he's done a good job making you think that he thinks this is the hardest fight of his career.
Yeah, I mean, GSP is a smart guy, and he knows what to say. He's always, I mean, it's sort of a tricky thing in that top level athletes, they generally have a thing, and some of them aren't very savvy at it. But the ones who are on top of their game, because they do so many media interviews, they never get caught off guard. You know, if you listen to someone, you know, like a Michael Jordan do an interview, like he knows exactly what to say to like avoid turning off, you know, avoid angering opponents if he wants to. Avoid saying things that are going to get anyone motivated or anyone upset, and just sort of say the right PR things. And I mean, it's sort of there's a series of cliches that a lot of people make fun of in the world of sports because the athletes use them so often to avoid giving sort of real answers. And GSP has that thing where he, when you do an interview with him for a period of time, he gives you exactly what he should be giving for the context of what he's trying to do, you know, making the guy a villain, making you think this guy's going to win, making it seem like, you know, making himself come across as a nice guy. But what he's so good at in doing it is that he does that, and at the same time, at least when you're talking with him a lot of the time with these, you aren't even noticing that he's doing it unless you're paying attention. And he's good enough that not only is he able to do exactly what he's supposed to, but you know, you're watching, you're thinking, hey, you know, GSP really does dislike Josh Koscheck, or hey, GSP really does think that Jake Shields is a big threat. And you know, I don't know if he does think that. You know, I mean, I'm sure that he's training as hard as he can because he wants to keep winning. But you know, he made it out to be more of a threat than I think he probably does think in his heart of hearts.
Lance, Randy or Lyoto?
I'm going with Randy, just because that's what will make me happy. I'm a huge Randy Couture fan. I think he'll find a way.
Todd?
I don't think he'll find a way, sadly. I'd love to see Randy get one more win, and I think he thinks that he has the right game plan and the right abilities to beat Machida, and I think stylistically it kind of is a good matchup for him. You know, with the dirty boxing game, the Greco game, the ability to close distances, get in his face. He's done that successfully against other opponents. But, I mean, he really is getting up there in age. Machida's a good technical counter-striker, and you got to be real careful going in on that guy. I think that Couture may have some success, but I think eventually Machida's just going to catch him with a counter-punch like Chuck did in that second fight and third fight and finish him off. So I think of it sort of like those Chuck fights in that I think Randy's probably got a better chance than the odds makers are giving him because the odds are real long, but I favor Machida.
I think Machida's going to win the fight, but I will say that I would be less surprised with Randy beating Lyoto than I would be with Jake Shields beating George St. Pierre.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means in terms of my odds, but... And finally, the Jose Aldo versus Mark Hominick fight. Todd, who are you picking?
I got Aldo. I mean, I keep saying that, you know, Aldo's going to... The tests are coming for Aldo. He hasn't been fighting nearly the level of competition the other top pound-for-pound guys are. And now as you start seeing the 155 guys drop down to 145, he's going to be facing a tougher level opposition. With that said, Mark Hominick, I don't really think fits the bill. I think Hominick is a good striker. He's not as great as I think they portrayed him out to be in the countdown. And I think that Aldo also has, you know, he has the ace in the hole with his ground game, which is world-class, and we never see it. So, if Hominick is able to strike with Aldo, Aldo, I think, has a decided advantage on the ground. With that said, I think this is going to be a real exciting fight while it lasts because both guys are so quick, and they've got such movement with their strikes. I think it's going to be a real fun fight while it lasts.
The only question mark to me is Aldo's health. You know, he had to pull out in January due to a cervical injury, which never sounds good. And yes, he's back in action now. He says he's 100%. He says he's completely healthy. I realize that Tito Ortiz is always full of shit, but now whenever anybody says that, I'm always like, really? You're 100% right now after having a cervical injury in January? So I think, you know, if he goes in there and just destroys Hominick, then it's going to be like, okay, well, I don't know who's going to beat Aldo. But I expect him to win, but I want to see how he performs in this fight before I really, you know, look at him as, is he really one of the elite pound for pounds right now in the world? He certainly was. You know, is he now? I don't know. I guess we'll find out. Lance, any thoughts on that fight?
Much like the Couture fight, I'm picking with my heart, not with my brain, so I'm going with Hominick.
Interesting. Well, Lance, it is a good show for you as 10 Canadians will be fighting the world on this particular show. And I presume you're buying this show?
Actually, I've got airport pickups because, again, I said my classes start on Monday, so I'm going to be busy all Saturday night.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah, not too thrilled with that, but I've got to do business before I do pleasure. So.
Well, let's plug the new session, and let's plug World of Hurt, which starts Sunday night on The Cave.
Yeah, stormwrestling.com will take you to my site as well as the Academy site. You can get information on Storm Wrestling Academy. Got a session starting Monday, another in September, three again next year. Come train with me. Again, four of my students have been signed to WWE deals so far. Hopefully more to follow. World of Hurt, Sunday night, 5 p.m. Eastern on The Cave. And that's about it. Also, you can follow me on Facebook, at Lance Storm on Facebook as well. Get a lot more quick, brief updates there, and then the major articles are on stormwrestling.com.
And Todd, do you have anything coming up?
Yeah, article on Charlie Valencia at LA Times, article on Randy Couture with thoughts from him and his trainer for the piece at Sherdog, and doing the live rundown from Toronto on Saturday night at latimes.com.
Awesome. Well, check it out, everybody. And, of course, thanks for listening. Thanks, Todd. Thanks, Lance. As noted, back later today with three more big guests, including the Mike Coughlin main event, which is coming up later this evening. So make sure you check that out. He'll be talking about Toronto as well. So that's later on tonight, everybody. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you again after a while.